from Farnham. Last year, before Hanukkah. So I want to talk about Hanukkah. Vayeshev is actually my bar mitzvah parsha and is a very dear parsha to me, but this is the chance. You'll hear a lot about Hanukkah over the next few weeks, but it's worthwhile to start preparing now, because Hanukkah has so many gifts that you can tap into that it's kedai to start tonight if you haven't started already. So there seems to be a big stir about Hanukkah, because on the one hand, Hanukkah defies other mitzvahs in the way we're very makel when it comes to Hanukkah. We're very lenient. A lot of aspects of Hanukkah seem to be go against. They're unique in the leniency. On the other hand, there's an aspect to it which is different than all other chagim. I'll start with the thing that Hanukkah has over any other chag, and that is 8 days. No other chag has 8 days. Sukkot has 7 days, and then the Shmini Atzeres, which we generally understand that Shmini Atzeres is a separate chag from Sukkot. 7 days of Sukkot, 7 days of Pesach. You guys in America, so you have a Shem Tov Sheni Shel Goliot, but there's only real 7 days in the Torah. And yet, Hanukkah comes and has 8 days. No other chag has 8 days. But on the other hand, when you look at the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah, it has so many unique elements to it that also make for a lot of questions. So our first question was, why we have one holiday here of 8 days, and we also have 8 days of Hallel Shalem. We say a full Hallel, even though it's a weekday, it's not a Yom Tov. On Chol HaMoed, Pesach, we say Chatzi Hallel. In Sukkah, we say a full Hallel for 7 days. And then the 8th day of Shmini Atzeres, we say Hallel. But here we have 8 days of full Hallel, which is also unique. We also have the additional prayer of Al Nisim, also unique. In Purim, we say Al Nisim as well. But 8 days of Hallel Shalom, 8 days of Hallel Nisim, the holders of the Hallel, this giving of thanks and praise to Hashem for 8 days. Unbelievable. And yet, when you look at the other side, on the leniency side, it's something also very striking. So we can list off probably 7 questions. You can count it as you want. It doesn't really so much make a difference. Just cooler when you have 8 questions, but really, you can call it as many as you want. A very well-known question is that there's no Masechet Hanukkah. We have Masechet Megillah. Some of you are going to be starting to learn Masechet Megillah. It's one day of Purim. Maybe they're 2 days of Purim, because now you're in Shalim, you celebrate 2 days. But really, wherever you are is really one day. Whether you're in Shalim, it's one day. If you live outside Shalim, it's one day. Combined, it's 2 days. But Hanukkah, you have 8 days, and we don't have Masechet Hanukkah. We don't even have Mishnayos about Hanukkah. There's no Mishnayos that mention Hanukkah. There are Mishnayos that mention Hanukkah derech agav. By the way, it mentions Hanukkah. We have 2. You can put away your phones again, unless you're taking notes on the shir, and you can send them to me if you are, because not everything here is in my computer, so it'll be helpful. There's no Mishnayos of Hanukkah. There is mention in, for example, mentioned about in the mission of Bikurim. It mentions that if you bring Bikurim from Sukkot until Hanukkah, so that you're maybe getting a Korah. You don't say the Pesukim. So don't say the special Pesukim that you say in Parshas Kisavo of Bikurim. Maybe getting a Korah until Michaga of Hanukkah. So there's a mention of Hanukkah, but if there are Hanukkah, it doesn't tell you anything about Hanukkah. And there's also mentioned in the Mishnah in Bava Kam and Perek HaMiniach that if a person, if you're mazik with fire, you're chayav. But if someone left a Hanukkah candle outside and then someone came by with a straw on the camel, and the camels, you know, walked by the fire, touched the straw, lit everything on fire. So you're putter, because it's near Hanukkah, it's mutter to have it outside. The rest of the year you'd be fine if you left the candle lit outside and someone walked by cause the fire. So it's only derech agav. There's no clear mention of Hanukkah or the description of Hanukkah in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi left it out. The question is why? Why didn't he? They certainly were celebrating during Bayit Sheni, the time of why wasn't any Mishnayos mentioned about Hanukkah? It's a very famous question. Other questions, difficulties about Hanukkah, unique to Hanukkah, is that the ideal place that we perform this mitzvah is actually outside our home. It says, Ner Yishu Beso, the mitzvah, the basic mitzvah is candle, man, and his home. And yet we light it, Al Pesach Beso Mibachut, we light it outside the house. And ideally, if you have a chatzer, which most people do and did, if you have a courtyard, you light it outside the courtyard. Not even at the entrance to your home, on the outside the entrance to the courtyard of your home. It's the only mitzvah we actually perform specifically outside. We also light it, another question, another difficulty, we light it lower than 10 tefachim. The question we asked last year. You light lower than 10 tefachim. Now again, if the mitzvah is pre-simonisa, you want to advertise, you want people to see it, you would expect it's better to light it higher than 10 tefachim. Most people are taller than 10 tefachim. Not everyone in the room here is. But most people, I'm not going to name names, most people are higher than 10 tefachim. 10 tefachim is about, 3 feet. A meter. So, the ideal place is to lie at lower than 10 tefachim. So, why don't we light it at eyesight? People see things, right? Better. The items you buy most in the supermarkets are those things that are eye level. Okay? And so we lie lower than 10 tefachim. And the Gemara says that Shina doesn't go lower than 10 tefachim, yet we put the candles lower than 10 tefachim. Another interesting thing about Hanukkah is that, and you'll probably learn these sugyas next week if you haven't started them already, is that the oils and the wicks that we don't use on Shabbos, and we don't use in the menorah and the mikdash, we actually do use or can use, it is mutter to use them on Hanukkah. Another interesting halacha is that if the candles blow out, Kavsa ain zokakla, or kavata. There are no SYs here. Kavsa ain zokakla. Okay? I can speak in Ashkenazis. The kavsa ain zokakla means that if it blows out, you don't have to relight it. And yet, what do you mean? You don't have to. It's lit for a split second. And it blows out, you don't have to relight it. You can if you want to. It's a nice thing to relight it, but you don't have to. You fulfill the mitzvah. Why should that be? Why should that work? Why shouldn't we have to light the candles for half an hour? You want presuming Nisa, shouldn't you want the candles lit the whole time? And you know, if it blows out, it's good, it's fine. Right? You know, imagine, we gave this example in Shir. You know, you're putting up a mezuzah, okay? And you want to show your wife how handy you are in the house. You're a man. Watch, I'll put up a mezuzah, you put up a mezuzah, you see, honey? See what I can do with the hammer and nails? Just call me Handyman Mike. And then as you're pointing to it, the thing falls down. It's on the floor. You're like, alright. Mitzvah's done. It's okay. But that's the case with Hanukkah. You can just blew out, it's fine. Two perhaps the most striking parts is that there is actually a bracha called Birkas Haroah, that if a person, for some reason, is not going to light himself, he actually can make a bracha, the second bracha. He can make that bracha when he sees someone else lighting the candles. He sees someone else's menorah lit. He can make what's called Birkat Haroah. We have no other mitzvah. There's no other mitzvah that you can make a bracha when seeing someone else doing mitzvah. You're seeing someone eat matzah. Right? You don't make a bracha because you see him in matzah. You see someone carrying a little vanessa, you don't make a bracha on that. And yet, you see someone lighting the candles, you make a bracha, Birkat Haroah. Now, if you're going to light yourself, you don't make the bracha. But if you're not going to light, you make a Birkat Haroah. That's very striking. Tosos asked this question. And then, perhaps the most striking thing is the time in which we perform this mitzvah. No other mitzvah in the Torah or in Chazal do we actually do it during this time, and that is Bein Hashmashot. Mishatishka Chama Ashutechel Regan Hashuk. During that time, Bein Hashmashot is actually a very difficult halachic time. We don't even know how to. We avoid Bein Hashmashot at all costs because we don't know what it is. It's a zman that is not a zman. It's neither night nor day. There are actually three different opinions what Bein Hashmashot is. It's either neither night nor day, or it's both night and day, or it's somewhere in the middle. It's some moment which we don't know when that moment is. It switches from night to day. But that time of Bein Hashmashot is a very confusing time. And yet, after that time, we're told to perform the mitzvah of Chanukah candles. So I think we listed off about seven different unique or difficult aspects of Chanukah. On the one hand, and the whole thing is a contradiction, because on the one hand you have these very unique halachos that seem to show a lot of leniencies, make the mitzvah very easy to perform. On the other hand, we see that there are 8 days of it, which we don't have any other holiday with 8 days. We say Hal Shalom for 8 days, Al Nisim, etc. So it seems on a certain contradiction here. So let's try to understand what the lessons that we can take from Hanukkah. What are the message here behind these unique halachos? And before we do so, I want to share with you an unbelievable story that actually just was shown to me today by Rabbi Haber. Unbelievable story which I've never seen before. It's brought down in the Sefer called Tiv HaMo'adim, which is by Rav Gamliel Rabinovich, one of the big Mekubalim today, big Rabbanim today. Rabbi Schneider's family is very close with him. And in this particular piece, he actually quotes two stories. First story we told over last week, the story of the Blizhava Rebbe lighting candles in Bergen-Belsen in the Shechiana. Unbelievable story. And the second story I never heard before. And I'm going to share with you, and we'll see how it ties into what we're going to share tonight. And the story is about a Jew who's also a Holocaust survivor. But unlike the Blizhava Rebbe, he sought to run as far as he could from anything Jewish. He decided that the way that he was going to protect his family, his future family, was to have nothing to do with Judaism whatsoever. As some survivors, tragically, that was the choice that they made. And so he went to move to a place where there are no other Jews. Apparently he married a Jew, but other than that, him and his wife decided they're not going to have anything to do with anything Jewish. Hide the fact that Jews changed their name to a non-Jewish name, and raise their kids as Christians. And he became a successful person, and when one of his children turns 13 years old, he tells his kid, "Come, I want to take you out for your birthday. We're going to go into town, and I'm going to, whatever you want, I don't care what it costs, I want to buy it for you. Let's go, we're going to choose together something amazing for you." And he goes, they go into the city, they're walking in the city, and sure enough, they walk past a Judaic store. Anna, are you with me? A Judaic store, look at this. And the kid says, "Can we go in here? I want to get something here." It's like, what? Like, why do you want to go in here? There's like so many cooler stores, you want to go in here? He says, no, I want to go in there. The kid knows nothing about Judaism. I want to go in here. So, you sure you want to go in here? You positive? Yeah, I want to go in. So they go in. And they're looking around. And Paul's like, "Please, let's just get out of here. You want to get out of here?" It's like, "Well, my kid is connected to something here. What's going on?" And he sees on one of the shelves this big menorah. And the kid points to the menorah and says, "I want this." So Paul says, What do you do with that? This is what I want. Dad, you said to me, whatever I want, you're going to get me. This is what I want. This is what you want? I give you anything else. You can do whatever you want. I'll get you. No, this is what I want. Okay, listen, the father said to him, whatever you want, I'll get him. So he says, he goes to the guy. He goes, sir, how much is this thing? So the guy says, this menorah? He says, yes. He says, it's not for sale. Not for sale. What do you mean it's not for sale? Not for sale. It's here as it's an heirloom, and it's not for sale. It's something very special. He says, what do you mean it's not for sale? And he says to his son, listen, it's not for sale. He goes, no, but I want it. You said you're going to get it. Whatever. He says, can you explain to me why it's not for sale? Yeah. This is a very special story behind this particular menorah. There were Jews in the Holocaust. There was a particular Jew who was in the ghetto. And in the ghetto, with tremendous self-sacrifice, he actually built this menorah made out of wood. As you can see, it's a very intricate piece. He obviously put a lot of effort and very, very special artisan that put this together. And so it has a lot of meaning for me, for the Jewish people, and it's not for sale. So he tells them, this is not for sale. Since that's what I want. So he turns to me, okay, how much are you willing to take for this? So I said it's not for sale. I'll give you, whatever, $1,000 for it. No, $2,000. Finally, he agreed on some crazy price. The guy, a man agrees to sell it to him. They take the menorah, brings it home. His father's like, the guy's like, what am I doing? I promised my son I have to keep my word. They bring the thing home. The kid's playing with it. He's trying to figure out what to do with it. And a few days later, the father walks in. He sees that the thing is broken. It's different, it's in pieces. And he says to his son, well, I don't understand you. What did you do here? We spent so much money in this hat. He goes, I'm sorry, but whatever. I was trying to figure out what I can do with it, and it just came apart. So the father sits down, okay, let's try to see if we can put it back together. And you saw how it was made with such chokhmah, with such wisdom, trying to figure out how to put it together. And while they're doing that, a piece of paper falls out of this thing. Father reads the paper, breaks down crying, and he passes out. They call paramedics, they come in, they revive him. He wakes up, passes out again. Finally, he comes to and they said, what happened? What's going on here? Why did you, what? So he said, I read this paper, written in Yiddish. And in it, it's on the paper, it says that what this man had gone through in the ghetto. And he said that you should know that I built this menorah with such self-sacrifice, such mysterious nefesh, but I don't even know if I'm going to even be able to light it. And if I'm able to light it on the first night, I don't know if I'll be able to light it on the second night, or the third night, whatever it is. So anyone who gets this menorah and reads this note, I beg of you that to learn Mishnayot, Le'ili Nishmas, myself and my family. And it's signed, my father. So, that's why I passed out. And the man took it as a clear Hashgacha Pratis, clear sign from Hashem. And he changed his whole lifestyle. And from that, he became a Baal Teshuva. His whole family became Baal Teshuva. And amazing. Chanukah is the last holiday. It's the last holiday that is instituted by Chazal until the Mashiach comes, until our return to Eretz Yisrael. But for 2,000 years, this is going to be the last holiday. Now, the Rambam writes, actually, one of the celebrations of Hanukkah, one of the reasons we celebrate Hanukkah is that the Malchus Chazra, that the kingdom returns to Jewish people for 200 years during time of Hashmonai. But it was short-lived. Those 200 years actually included some of the worst kings in our history. Kings came from the Hashmonaite kingdom who were not from Davidic descent. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim that the only king really should be, kings should only be, can only be proper king in Israel can only come from a Davidic dynasty. Kohanim, Kashanayim, were Kohanim. They obviously are not descended from David, but they're descended from Aaron. David was from Shevet Yehuda, and Kohanim come from Shevet Aaron, from Shevet Levi. So even though they weren't the ideal kings, but still the fact that the Jewish people were under their own dominion for 200 years, that is reason to celebrate. So that's as the Rambam says. Obviously, you can apply that same reasoning to what time we're living in right now. That's for another time. Now, says those 200 years, as I said, included some of the worst kings in our history. Kings who killed all the Chachamim. Okay, Yanai was not a good guy. Read the Gemara and Brachos. That he couldn't find anyone. They had a big meal. No one knew how to bench. And his wife was the sister of Shimon HaTzadik, and she was afraid to call in her brother to teach them how to bench because he was afraid that he would kill him also. Only after Yanai promised that he wouldn't kill him, did he invite her brother to the meal so that he can lead the benching. But it was a terrible time, much worse than any Israeli government that existed or will fall or will come or pass a law against forcing people to go to the army. Much worse. And yet, those 200 years was the fact that the Jewish people were self-governing was something very significant, the Rambam felt. However, as we said, it wasn't the greatest time for the Jews. And in fact, you could probably say that maybe 80 years of those 200 were positive, and then the last 120 was bad news. Aristobulus was also not a great guy. And the temple was destroyed 200 years later after the story of Hanukkah. And Jews going to Gullus. It was only really a short period of time in the larger picture of history that Hanukkah was something to celebrate. In fact, the Gemara Yerushalmi tells of a very tragic story that's actually related to Hanukkah. Alexandria became a destination for a lot of Jews that were running from Israel when the Romans came. And actually, Alexandria, apparently in our history, there was never a bigger synagogue than a synagogue in Alexandria. There were hundreds of thousands of Jews that ran to Egypt. And one of the Roman generals was trying to conquer, areas of Africa, Sudan. And they were stationed in Alexandria. And on Tisha B'Av, this general, I forgot his name, him and his wife, they had a child. On Tisha B'Av, when all the Jews were mourning. And that child got sick and died on Hanukkah, the following Hanukkah, when all the Jews were lighting candles and celebrating. The woman, the wife, says, look, when the child was born, they were mourning us. And now when the child died, they're celebrating Hanukkah. Before you conquer Sudan and the rest of Africa, take care of the Jews. And he went and he went on a massacre. Holocaust of its time. Hundred thousand Jews, men, according to the Gemara Yerushalmi, were killed. And then they went to the women. After killing all the men, they went to the women and said, okay, you have a choice. You want to live, then you live with the Roman soldiers, or you can join your husbands. And they chose to join their husbands. And this whole tragic thing was connected to Hanukkah. Chazal, in their infinite wisdom, were mitaking a yontif of Hanukkah, which was going to be the last yontif that was going to keep us for 2,000 years. The Radak says the pasuk in Tehillim. Pasuk in Tehillim that says, Arachti ner v'mishichi. I prepared a candle for Mishichi, for my Mashiach. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, the Radak says that this is a reference to Nerot Hanukkah. And the Chernobyl, the Moray Nayim, he develops this idea that the whole way that we can prepare for Mashiach the way that we can prepare ourselves that will keep us, that we can survive and perhaps even thrive in this long and dark galus, is through the Ner of Hanukkah. Chiddush Harim says. Chiddush Harim is the first Rebbe of Ger. He says that actually the thing that kept us, what kept the Jews in during the Golus is Ner Chanukah. The Pasuk, quotes the Pasuk, it says, Gam ke'eshev b'choshech Hashem orli. Even when I sit in darkness, Hashem gives me light, referring to the Ner of Chanukah. In other words, it's the Chanukah candles that was given to us, this gift, a parting gift, as we were. Hanukkah was like this going away party, giving us Seder L'Derech, what we call in Hebrew. Here's something to take with you as you go on your journey, the journey that we're still in, that we have not yet completed. It's the Ner of Hanukkah that is through this gift that we can survive the Golus. Now, let's go back and try to plug in. Plug in and see how this works out. So it's very clear. It's very clear that many of the laws of the Hanukkah is dafka, specifically to illuminate those places that have less light, or the ability to give light. We light on the outside. On the outside, mipetach beito mibachutz. We light on the outside. It is below 10 tefachim. The lower it is place, that's where the darker it is. And specifically during Ben HaShemashot. Specifically in the time, again, that is not, has no hagdara, has no definition of time. It's a place that's undefined, a time that's undefined. A time of confusion. You know, we also live in a time where people don't want to be defined. People, you ask people who are you, or what do you, where do you find yourself? What part of the Jewish community you're part of? And we tend to define ourselves by what we're not. Often people won't say what they are, they'll say what they're not. Now you ask somebody, so what kind of a Jew are you? You say, well, I'm not a Haredi Jew. Okay, so what are you? I'm not really Tzioni either. I'm just, Orthodox? Well, yeah, I'm kind of Orthodox. I'm not really Orthodox, but, Ortho practice. We find a lot of people that won't give a definition of who they are. That's the time we live in. It's what's the time called postmodernism. We don't want to give labels to anything, to ourselves. That's the time Ben HaShemashos. But this, the mitzvah of Hanukkah also enables us to fulfill the mitzvah, to connect to this mitzvah, even when we're not connected to a particular home. Many, many, many times during this 2,000-year Golus, we were without a home. We were. Thrown out of one home, thrown out of another home. We were on the road, and yet we still can connect to this mitzvah. You can connect to the mitzvah which the Birkas Haroah by making a blessing on seeing the candles, even if you yourself. And again, we're living in a time where it's hard to appreciate, but we have so much on the levels of Gashmiut. We have so much. There's probably never a time in our history where we have so much. It's very hard to find, even though there are people that are poor, and the Jews that are living below the poverty line, but even the Jews in Israel that are living below the poverty line, you won't find Jews living in the streets without a roof over their heads, or without able to eat a decent meal. Used to be when guys went to learn yeshiva, the imams, they starved them. So even if you don't like the dinners here, you say you're starving, you don't have what to eat, that we live in a time. We live in a time of such affluence, Baruch Hashem. But, you know, you speak to your grandparents and ask them what it was like growing up. Even your grandparents, I mean, even they were, some of them that were born in America, many of them probably born in America, right? They compare what growing up to you know, to today, the level of affluence, even with after 2008, and after a lot of people have lost their jobs and not earning like they used to even 10 years ago. They have a lot to be thankful for, but on the other hand, on the level of ruchnius, on the level of spirituality, there's even though again we have a lot to be thankful for, you know, the amount of Torah learning, but there's still a lot that we're missing. But the Chanukah candles, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, we have the ability, even when we maybe lack, for 2,000 years, most of us lack those physical comforts, lack maybe a roof over our head, and maybe even didn't have enough money to light with the best oils and wicks. So you can even light with the cheapest oils and wicks. With Greece, and again, we told the story last week. The story of the lighting of Hanukkah and Bergen-Belsen. They didn't have the quality of, you know, extra virgin olive oil that you're able to use when you light candles. Not even regular virgin olive oil. They had Greece. And so there were times when we couldn't even afford that, and yet you could be mishtatef b'pruta, halacha is. You can just join in someone else's mitzvah by just giving him a penny, a nickel, a dime, and that you can fulfill the mitzvah that way. So the ability to fulfill the mitzvah was given to us in a way that it can stay with us even during the times of Galus when we lack the comforts of being in our home and our homeland. And if it goes out, you don't have to relight it. Again, just to make it as easy, as accessible for every Jew for the next 2,000 years. What's interesting is that, as I mentioned, is that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi doesn't count it in the Mishnayot. He doesn't list it in the Mishnah. Which is very striking. Because the whole point of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi writes the Mishnah, he writes it, and he performs an Avera by writing it. The Torah itself tells us that the Torah Shavuot is not allowed to be written down. As the Gemara Gittin Daf Samach tells us. It's usher to write down the oral Torah. And yet Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and his Haverim felt that if we don't write down the oral Torah, the Torah will not survive. People will forget the Torah. And there are many, many different things that we have forgotten. I told some of the guys in my shiur the story about the sits. The gold plate that the Kohen Gadol would wear on his forehead. And as the machlokas there in the Gemara, when it says Kodesh LaHashem, is it written on one line Kodesh LaHashem? Or is it two lines? Kodesh and LaHashem underneath it. And the Gemara says, what was it? We don't know. We forgot. They didn't know. There are parts of our tradition that we've lost. Tcheles is a lost tradition. The people think that now they know what tcheles is, but one of the reasons that people don't wear tcheles is because it's a lost mesorah. We don't know for sure. It's a mesorah that was lost. How did we lose it? We lost it. Imagine if Rabbi Yehuda Nasi didn't write down the Mishnah, what our Judaism would look like today. So many things that relate to Mesugadot and Mesechah Zvachim and Menachos, the laws related to the Tum and Tara and the Mikdash and Karbonos, there's so many things we don't know. We don't know because we stopped practicing them. We lost that Mesorah. So they violated the Torah. Eis Lasos LaShem, Mekeh V'Torah Sefer. They violated the Torah in order to preserve the Torah. In order to do to God, they committed a sin. And by doing so, they preserved the Torah. And yet, they didn't write the Mishnayos, they didn't write Rav Hanukkah. And many different answers given why. One of them that's given is actually sounds a bit historical. One of the answers that's given is that they were under the Roman Empire at the time when Rav Yehuda HaNasi was writing Mishnayos, and it was like censored. They were afraid if they write about Hanukkah, they're afraid the Romans would stop it, would attack them. Because basically writing about what Hanukkah happened would perhaps, you know, rile up the crowd. That, you know, let's do it again. It would encourage like another Bar Kokhba rebellion. We can just take a small group of people and we can fight off the Romans. So they didn't want that. The Romans didn't want to tell a story about how we defeated the Greeks. You know, Rabim Yad Matim, the great in the hands of the few. And so he left it out. He made little references to it, little hints. But my Hanukkah, the story of my Hanukkah, you're going to learn in the Gemaras this week, next week. That was hidden. That was hidden. There was a danger of it being forgotten. But that's the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah. The Torah Shebaal Peh. The oral tradition, it's in this mitzvah where the oral tradition being oral is preserved. Because it's the oral tradition that's what keeps us. What keeps us in unique as Jews, separate as Jews, in Golus. The oral tradition was developed because the Torah Shebaal Peh is closed and the oral tradition is taught as an oral tradition is to enable us to actually survive when we are on the run, when we don't have access to books, we don't have access to base medrash, when we're going to Golus, when our whole existence is going to be dependent upon a father teaching a child, a Rebbe teaching a child without a book. Just from word of mouth to another word of mouth. There's some people that light outside. Many the Snagdim light outside. But people who come from the Hasidic tradition, all the Hasidic Rebbes today, they light inside. Even in Eretz Yisrael, where generally the minhag is to light outside, like for example, Rabbi Yashiv Zatzal, when he was in the hospital, I believe he was in Shari Tzedek Hospital, and he was ill, and his family brought the Chanukiah. He was there over Hanukkah. They brought the menorah to him to light in his room, and he refused to light in his room. So the mitzvahs can only be performed outside. So he sent the shliach to light, you know, by his house on one of his neighbors, and where he lived near Meir Sharim, but he refused to light. He felt he wasn't fulfilling the mitzvah if he lit in the room in Shari Tzedek Hospital. But by the Hasidish Rebbes, they light inside. What's the reason they light inside today? Because today, and this is one of the deeper ideas, that today, what's outside, things at the outside that we try to protect ourselves from sometimes, has penetrated inside the house. The things that we like to keep outside, like that comedian I was telling you in the beginning, that we don't want coming into our homes or having to listen to stuff like that, has penetrated even Beit Shemesh. Penetrated even our own homes. Even the house of the sun is penetrated. And so they light inside the Hasidim. And the idea is because we want to light the candles inside to push away those kochot, those those negative energies that are already in our home. We need to just at least try to save the home. And let's try to push away the darkness, push away those things that have permeated our homes. In my house, we actually light inside and outside. Try to do both. We try to light outside, fill those opinions, light inside, fill those opinions, and to try to drive away those forces that try to get us on the outside and on the inside. We need both. My friends, we allow me just in just 2 or 3 minutes, just to, even though probably again a lot of the people that maybe need to hear this more are not the ones that are here, they're already on the outside. But Hanukkah is an unbelievable opportunity. There's one question we have not yet answered, and that's the question of the eight. Hanukkah is a chance, as we know, eight. Eight is the number that's in Lamala Menatana. It's the eight connects to the supernatural. There's seven musical notes, and the eighth note is a higher octave. It's the Maral writes about it, and you'll hear a lot about it over Hanukkah. It's the number that's Lamala Menatana. We can tap into something even greater than the natural order of things. Hanukkah allows us to tap into something great, to connect HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to say Halal Shalom, to sing praise and thanks to Hashem. And you can really access something even greater than ourselves. We make a bracha, there's a Birkas HaRoach, which I also didn't talk about so much, that we can, even by looking into the candles, looking into unique to Hanukkah, that there's a special quality you can be mitchaber, that you can connect to those Hanukkah menorah. The menorah is something that has actually stayed with us, that's withstood the test of time. The menorah is the Chanukiah that we light today actually connects us to the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. And it's the only thing that's left to how we connect ourselves to the Beis HaMikdash. When we look into those candles, we're connecting actually to the Beis HaMikdash. I'll just quickly reference the Ramban on Parshas Baaloscha, where he talks about where with the mitzvah of the menorah and that Aaron HaKohen, he was upset that the other Nesiim, they brought their Karbanos, and Hashem says, I will comfort you, Aaron HaKohen, with the mitzvah of menorah. And so the mitzvah of menorah is actually going to be something that's going to last forever. What do you mean it's going to last forever? Just like the Karbanos, once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, we stop bringing Karbanos, so to the menorah, we stop buying menorah. So the Ramban says, no, the Medrash is telling us, it's referring to the menorah known as the Hanukkah menorah. That the Hanukkah menorah is an extension of the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. That when we light the Hanukkah menorah, we're actually connecting to the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. And when we look at those candles and we light the menorah, it's the one thing we still have a connection to. It's the one, the menorah actually gets removed because it's one thing that in theory could have been taken outside. Even though the Kohanim had to clean the menorahs, do the Hatavas Haneros, but in theory, the Rambam says that the Kohanim could have taken the menorah out, and it could have been lit by a non-Kohen, by a Zar, in theory, and then brought back in. It's the only clean of the Beis HaMikdash that you can take outside. And that's what we have today. It's outside. We have it today. And so, Hanukkah affords us an amazing opportunity. And I implore you to take advantage of this opportunity that Hanukkah affords us. To connect to something supernatural. Some of you may have already heard about the Mivtza, about the tradition here in our yeshiva that the organizer, Ari Rabowski, every year, of trying to connect to something greater than yourself, in the sense of taking advantage of the lot of free time you have over Hanukkah. And if you learn 30 hours of Gemara, time that's outside the time of the regular Siddurim, be able to go and eat like a Roman in Papagayos. But forget about the prize. It's just the ability to actually take content to make something go beyond yourself. And I also implore you to you have days of vacation on Hanukkah and use it well. When you're deciding what you're going to do, don't consider, take into account that it's Hanukkah. Take into account that there's a mitzvah of near Hanukkah. Yes, I can take it wherever I want to. I can take it wherever I go, I can light it, and even in the places that are dark, I can light it. But spend time with your Hanukkah candles. Understand the serious nefesh of 2,000 years of Jews who lit those candles. And realize what you can tap into. Spend time looking, just staring into the fire, and think about that this is the last holiday that the Jewish people were given to bring them, to prepare us to the Bias Gal Tzedek, the Mashiach, that connects us from the Beis HaMikdash in the past towards the Beis HaMikdash in the future. And it's going to be us, you guys, that are going to be the ones, hopefully, that will be of the builders of the Binyan Bayish Shlishi, Meher B'Yomeinu. Have a good evening.